You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. On today's show, got a lot to get to. In the first segment, I want to talk about Sandy Alderson's most recent comments as he spoke with the media early on Monday. Then in the second segment of today's show, I will go through a little bit about what happened in the Mets' first taste of Grapefruit League action as they lost to the Miami Marlins 2-0. And I will also talk about some of Luis Rojas' comments prior to that game and after that game. Then finally, in the third segment of the show, I was joined by Matt Musico of MetsMorizeOnline.com to talk about an article he wrote about Francisco Lindor and how he is really primed to potentially become the greatest shortstop in Mets history. It's a very interesting topic of discussion, so I'm looking forward to playing that for all of you. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. So let's start off with Sandy Alderson. One of the things that was talked about during this session with the media was the fact that he's very happy with what the Mets were able to accomplish this offseason. He says that they added players on the top end as well as on their depth, citing all the additions they made. And if you look at the way this offseason ultimately progressed, yes, they struck out on the quote-unquote big three, right, of Trevor Bauer, George Springer, and JT Realmuto. And maybe the Mets didn't do the best they could when it came to shopping at that top tier of the market in free agency and even in some of the mid-tiers. But overall, as we've been talking about on this show, you look at the great overhaul of talent that the Mets were able to acquire here and really turn over that 40-man roster and bring in so much depth. I mean, we talk about guys like Jordan Yamamoto and Sam McWilliams and Joey Lucchesi and all of these moves the Mets were able to make to add some pitching. Even the moves that I didn't love when we're talking about the Jonathan Villar and Kevin Pillar and, you know, some of those other fringe moves, Albert Amora Jr., I wasn't completely thrilled with all of them, but when you put it together and you just look at the type of major league roster that can now be assembled and the 40-man roster around that active roster, I mean, Sandy Alderson and his team did a great job. So I'm not surprised he's happy with what they were able to accomplish. He accomplished more in this offseason than he ever was able to under the Wilpons. So he has to be happy with that. And really, I mean, you look back and throughout his tenure previously, what were the big moves he was able to make? What offseason was he able to accomplish? More than two or three things. So clearly this is a completely different animal now running the New York Mets. But with that being said, one of the fascinating quotes that came out of this media session was when Alderson said, quote, "At some point, even Steve Cohen runs out of money." And this was in reference to being asked about George Springer. And basically, it came down to 5 or 6 years, and the Mets weren't comfortable going to 6 years for Springer. They had a price, and they didn't want to exceed it. And one of the things that Alderson mentioned is that by signing Springer, that could have precluded the Mets from being able to keep Conforto long-term. So, I'm okay with that, but you better land Conforto and sign him to that extension. I think that's going to be something that we're all going to have our eyes on right now, as Alderson and the Mets are going to be in the process of talking to Conforto's representatives and talking to Francisco Lindor's representatives about contract extensions. And that's basically where we are in this offseason. That's kind of the last hurdle that the Mets have to go through here to really have an A++ offseason. It's great even if they don't sign those guys, but if they are able to establish this as a young core moving forward, that's something that will really take this team over the top. Not necessarily, obviously it's the same team, but by perception, to understand moving forward that Michael Conforto and Francisco Lindor are not just one-year players for this franchise. They are the building blocks. That's really important. And I do believe at least one of these deals gets done, and maybe both. So that's obviously something we will be keeping our eyes on. One more player that was mentioned by Alder, someone who spoke to the media as far as contract extensions, was Noah Syndergaard. He said it would be natural for us to have conversation with Syndergaard about an extension prior to him hitting free agency later this year. So that's obviously interesting because he didn't mention Marcus Stroman, but did mention Noah Syndergaard. And I think at times we do forget that there is some inherent biases that exist when you talk about executives and some of the players they brought in. Noah Syndergaard was one of the staples of Alderson's first tenure with the Mets. He was part of probably Alderson's best move when you think about the fact that he structured R.A. Dickey's contract in a way that he was able to trade him after that Cy Young season and land prospects like Syndergaard and Travis d'Arnaud. So it's not surprising he would want to keep him around. It's not surprising he'd want to keep Michael Conforto around after drafting him previously. And it's also not surprising that he didn't mention Marcus Stroman, a player that was acquired by his successor in Brody Van Wagenen in a trade that cost a couple of his own prospects that he was part of drafting and acquiring in Simeons Wood Richardson and Anthony Kay. So I'm not saying he has anything against Stroman, but I think that he's probably a little bit more biased to keep around some of the guys that he brought into the organization. Anyway, when we get back in just a minute, I'm going to talk about the first spring training game for the Mets and also get into some of Luis Rojas' comments before and after the game. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for other important things like your mortgage or food. So why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, maybe even 100% more for the exact same amount of parts at a chain store or new car dealership? RockAuto.com is a family business that's been serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. They have everything you could want from engine control modules to brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and then choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in there, "How'd you hear about us, Box?" so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the Mets' first game in the Grapefruit League as they lost to the Miami Marlins. But Brandon Nimmo showed out, got a couple of hits, including a leadoff single, and he actually ended up getting picked off on that single, making a hard turn towards second, couldn't get back to the bag. That was one of two notable base-running blunders as Kevin Pillar later got thrown out trying to turn a single into a double as Starling Marte made a perfect throw to gun him down. These were interesting instances because Luis Rojas, after the game, called them aggressive mistakes, which he is very happy to live with right now in spring training. This is the time to test your boundaries, to see when you can push that and get the extra bag, because these games don't matter. And I swear, if we get to a point where the Mets are 0-7 in the Grapefruit League, I do not want to hear anybody freaking out over it. I think at times, the Grapefruit League or spring training in general could be a little bit of an indicator of what's to come. I mean, I remember, it's weird that I think back to a Yankees season, but I believe in 2016, 2017, when that core of Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge and all of them were starting to kind of rise through the ranks and get up to the major league level, the Yankees had like an amazing spring training and it carried over into the season. Sometimes you'll see that, but generally that's just because you're seeing some young players get their first big shot and they run with it, and then you all of a sudden see that translate at the big league level later on. A Mets example would be before 2019, we saw Dominic Smith and Pete Alonso in particular tear the cover off the ball. Both of them made the opening day roster that year when we thought it was really a battle between one or the other to see who would make the team. And now they've basically been on the major league roster ever since and have been big time contributors. That same spring training, if I remember correctly, Robinson Cano was damn near close to leading the Mets in hitting, and then he basically started the season with an extended drought. So these things never quite manifest themselves entirely into the regular season. I think for the most part, you buy individual performances. So if you see a pitcher who really shows out in spring training, you might say, okay, that's somebody who we can really, you know, count on this year, at least at the start, to be part of a bullpen, or, you know, if it's a competition for a fifth starter role. If it's the team as a whole isn't getting runners around to score, like we saw in this first game where they had some threats but they didn't quite get any runs on the board, I would not jump to the extreme of saying, oh no, this is the same Mets from last year who couldn't hit with runners in scoring position and couldn't find a way to put runs on the board. Let's all take a deep breath on stuff like that and just focus on some of the individual performances that you want to see. And for Brandon Nimmo, a couple hits in his first game, that is a good start. And one of the things about Nimmo that Luis Rojas basically said prior to the game, and I was on that press conference for Mesmerize, was that he sees Nimmo as the leadoff hitter. Now, he did also say that there was 15 some odd combinations he'd already come up with when he's just writing out potential lineups. It was a very lineup-heavy presser, I must add. But Rojas really talked about how he's toying with putting guys in different spots in the lineup and playing other guys in different positions on the field. There's a lot that he can do with this roster. It's very flexible with the guys like, you know, VR, who can play all over the diamond, with the potential to mix in a Pilar or an Almora against a lefty, maybe even both on some rare circumstances, with guys like Brandon Nimmo and Dominic Smith maybe going to the bench. You had the ability to slide McNeil from second to third to the outfield if they wanted to. Again, you're making move around. If they want to play around J.D. Davis, they can. But the bottom line is there's a lot of combinations that Rojas is going to play with, particularly in spring training, as he tries to see what works. But ultimately, what we saw in this game with Nimmo leading off and Lindor batting second, pretty sure that's something we're going to see heading into the season. It makes a lot of sense. The question from there is, where does Jeff McNeil hit? How do you want to factor in your power bats? Is Pete Alonso going to bat third with Conforto batting fourth? Then where do you put McNeil? It's very interesting right now with a team this deep, but because of Brandon Nimmo's incredible ability to get on base, it always makes sense to bat him leadoff. And you're lucky when you have a team like this where you could probably make a similar argument for guys like McNeil or even Lindor to take that role as well. It is really just an embarrassment of riches. Getting back to the game, for the Mets pitchers, we saw Harold Gonzalez get the quote-unquote start, but he only went an inning. Did pitch a scoreless frame, as did Sean Reed Foley, Stephen Tarpley, Thomas Sabuki, Trevor Hildenberger, and Daniel Zamora. Riley Gilliam was the only Met to give up runs as he allowed a two-run homer to Jesus Aguilar. Now, it is interesting going back to Sabuki because he was touching 95 in this game, and his velocity was reportedly down at the alternate site last year. So the fact now that we're seeing that uptick in velocity, that is definitely promising for a pitcher that represents a real area of need for the Mets as a starting pitching prospect in the upper level of their farm system. As we know, Brody Van Wagenen traded a lot of those guys, so it will be really interesting to see Zupuki kind of take off throughout this spring training, because he could be one of those guys in Syracuse that maybe has a little bit of a higher ceiling if the Mets end up starved for starting pitching at some point this year. Now, speaking of starting pitching, it appears like Marcus Stroman is going to get the start on Tuesday. As you're listening to this, he might be on the mound. Jordan Yamamoto was supposed to be the starter. I would expect he's going to pitch as well. Not sure what the order of that's going to be or who else will be on the mound. This is still that point in spring training where guys are only going to go one, maybe two innings at the most. You're going to see a lot of people pitching these games, and you just kind of get to get a feel for what they're bringing to the table, at least early on. I'm going to be looking forward to a couple guys in particular to seeing them get in action, like a Dellin Betances. You want to see where that velocity is at. You know, like a Sam McWilliams, you want to see how his stuff is playing up. So hopefully we'll start to see some of those major league contributors get some action very soon. Now, before we get to the final segment where I was joined by Matt Musico, I want to talk about a few more comments from Luis Rojas on Monday. And these comments are about Francisco Lindor, who we're going to talk about more in just a minute. Rojas continues to glow about Lindor, talked about how he really hit the ground running as a leader, came into a new clubhouse and was loud. He's Mr. Smiley. Everyone loves his energy. He said his leadership has been more than I could have expected. This is the type of culture-shifting player that can really take your franchise to another level. And to have him on the field, I think Rojas mentioned that, you know, the talent was never in question, but you didn't know what the work was going to look like. And everyone has come away just simply impressed with everything this dude has to offer. And that's why I think a lot of us are really excited for this season. I mean, I've said it a million times. I'll keep saying it. The best player to change teams this offseason is Francisco Lindor. He is the one that's going to move the needle more than anyone else. Sure, the Mets missed out on Trevor Bauer. They missed out on George Springer. They were never really in on JT Realmuto. None of those guys, in my opinion, will have a bigger impact on their team than Francisco Lindor. And Matt Musico of Mets Merize believes he could have the impact as potentially becoming the best shortstop in franchise history. Going to play my conversation with him about just that in a minute. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. You can also find awards, TV shows, and even reality TV on BetOnline. They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Mets fans, for today's MMO segment, happy to be joined by another editor for Mets Merize, Matt Musico. I want to talk to him about this great piece that went up today on Monday called Comparing Francisco Lindor's 2021 Projections to Past Mets Seasons. First off, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ryan. I appreciate it, man.
Now, this was a really interesting piece because what you do a good job of is kind of explaining that the Mets really haven't had a shortstop like Lindor, aside from maybe Jose Reyes. Was that something you were expecting when you started to get into this piece?
Yeah, you know, when the Mets first acquired Lindor, I kind of took a little bit of a look back. I think it was back in January when they made the trade. And I kind of already knew that. But then I was kind of just looking at his projections for this upcoming year, and then also kind of looking at his 162-game averages for the duration of his career since he made his debut. And I was like, these seem aggressive, but they're not, because they're essentially what he's done throughout the entire part of his career. Even at the first two seasons, when he wasn't really that 30 plus home run hitter that he kind of turned himself into. So I was like, I was just really curious as to, you know, how much better he was, or how much of an upgrade he is compared to everything else we've seen in the past. And we all know that he's going to be an upgrade, and it's just nice to be able to kind of quantify exactly how much of an upgrade we could potentially be getting for this year, especially, but then hopefully, you know, for the rest of this decade, if we're lucky enough.
Yeah. And I mean, you make a pretty clear case that if the Mets are to extend Lindor and he produces, you know, what you say, five, even if he just replicates what he just did in Cleveland, he would essentially be right there with Reyes as maybe the best shortstop in franchise history.
Yeah, easily. I think Reyes's career F4 for hit preferred at shortstop is about 33.7. And for the last six seasons, Lindor is at around, I think it was like 29 or something like that. So he would already be, if he was with the Mets for the past 6 years, he'd be the second best shortstop in Mets history just by that one metric. But the thing, I wasn't too surprised by some of the results, obviously, just because we've known Lindor to be one of the best players in baseball over the last 6 years or so since he made his debut. What really kind of made me take a pause and really hesitate was just, you know, he averaged 118 WRC plus over his past six seasons, and, you know, and before he even really has gotten to his physical prime at this point in his career. And there have only been two other seasons, single seasons, by Mets shortstops that have been at that level or above, which is pretty ridiculous. And one of them was Reyes's NL batting title season in 2011. We knew that the Mets haven't necessarily had one of those offensive juggernauts at shortstop throughout their history, but, you know, only having one player hitting 20 plus home runs, especially over the past 20 years in this game, when there's been such a boom in home runs, like that's ridiculous. And it's been Asdrubal Cabrera in 2016. This is literally the full package. Like, we've had great shortstops in the past, people who could do a lot of great things really well, but they weren't necessarily that jack of all trades. We had Ray Ordonez, who was really, really good at fielding, but couldn't hit the broadside of a barn most of the time. And then we had someone like Reyes, who could do kind of everything well. He had a little bit of power, had the speed, had the arm, and was able to field and whatnot, but he didn't stick around long enough. And he also had injury problems as well too. And it seems as if, from what we're seeing, at least Lindor is going to give us a little bit of everything, while also staying healthy, knock on wood, because, you know, now he's a Met. Even though we have new ownership, they're still Mets and they can still get injured a lot. But it just got me even more excited for what's to come, just because, you know, we've been aware of him, but he's been stuck in Cleveland, so we don't necessarily get to see him play as much as we should have. And now getting to see this guy day in and day out, especially just through the first little part of camp, you can see the impact he's already had. And he hasn't even, well, he's about to step foot onto the field for the first time as a Met, as we're talking right now, but it's just only going to get better. This is a feeling that we haven't really gotten to experience very many times just overall, and definitely not at shortstop.
I think what's really differentiating factor is that power. I mean, you just mentioned Asdrubal Cabrera being the only shortstop with the 20 home runs. That's kind of shocking. And I look at the shortstops that have brought some power to that position for the Mets. It's been the guys that are kind of playing out of position, Cabrera, Wilmer Flores. So to have someone who can bring you that 30 home run pop with the glove attached to it, that's just something we haven't seen before in a Mets uniform.
Yeah, it's a really weird feeling, man. I'm still unsure how I'm going to even how to even process it sometimes, because it doesn't even feel like it's real. Last week, when his portrait from Photo Day got released, and it's like, this is like actually real. It's really happening. We have a guy like this on our team, and they want to keep him around for a long time, because that, you know, even if we had a guy on our team like this in the past with the Wilpons, there was never any guarantee that he'd even stick around for a long period of time. So it's really encouraging. It's really exciting. And to even see these projections seem like they're a little aggressive, but they're kind of like baseline projections for Lindor and his production over the past few years too. And, you know, he's projected to have, like, I think it was the 12th highest WAR or F4 amongst qualified MLB players right now. And that's crazy to think that that's kind of like the baseline for him, just based off of what he's done in recent years.
Yeah, I think there was two really interesting stats you had in there. There was that one, I think it was it Corey Seager and Fernando Tatis, I think, were the only shortstops who were projected to have a higher WAR. And then you also had that his defense was second to only Andrelton Simmons as far as projections. So, I mean, that's elite stuff. And I think if you look at, you know, my fandom, I'm 25, this feels a lot like Carlos Beltran, you know, getting a player like that where you get this actual bona fide superstar that you look at and you're just like, there's no holes in this game that I'm looking at. There's nothing I can point to and say, well, there's a couple guys in baseball that do that better than Lindor. Like, he just kind of checks all the boxes. And I really do encourage everyone to check out that article that Matt wrote. Again, the title is Comparing Francisco Lindor's 2021 Projections to Past Mets Shortstops, to kind of get a better idea of how he really does stack up and why you should all be excited to watch Lindor play this season. So thank you for coming on, Matt. And why don't you let everyone know where they can find your work?
We can find all my Mets work is at Metsmerized. And I like to talk a lot about the Mets and share some old videos and new videos about the Mets, just kind of taking strolls down memory lane on Twitter. You can find me at MMusico8.
Awesome. Looking forward to having you on again in your next piece.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
That'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan, and follow the show at Locked On Mets. And if you're the type of baseball fan that can't help but get giddy over prospects, we have the podcast for you, and that's Locked On MLB Prospects, hosted by minor league play-by-play voice Aram Layton. This is the only daily podcast devoted entirely to the stars of tomorrow. So make sure you check out Locked On MLB Prospects wherever you get your podcasts and stay plugged into the future of your favorite team, the New York Mets. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.